Alrighty, folks, welcome to this episode of the Jackson Lucas Impact Real Estate Podcast. I'm excited to introduce you all to Lon Elliott. I think you're going to greatly enjoy listening to her. She is a phenomenal friend, human being, woman, leader in the hospitality space. She has co-founded Acadia Hospitality, and prior to that, worked at Intercontinental Hotels, W Hotels, as well as Host Hotels and Resorts, and like me, started her career at KPMG. I encourage you all to like, rate, review the podcast, share with your friends, and be on the lookout for Lon, because she's an incredible human being. Hi, Lon. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me. I am doing great today. I am really looking forward to this conversation.
Me too. I was so excited to have you on. My hospitality podcasts are always the most interesting because I feel like hospitality people have a little bit more of a flair to them, let's just say. So, and you went to college with a lot of hospitality people, I assume, going to Cornell undergrad and then MBA. Tell me, did you always want to be in hospitality?
Well, going back to high school, yes. I did decide, I applied to the hotel school at Cornell when I was a senior in high school. So it's always been the area that I've loved. I grew up overseas in Singapore, and my family didn't have a lot of means, but my stepfather was French, and my mom used to say the French will spend money on food and travel. And those were two areas that we got to splurge. So I got to eat at some very nice restaurants and got to take amazing vacations. And so when it came to picking a career, I've always just loved travel. And so it was natural for me. And it's interesting, our industry, especially hospitality, is very cyclical. There's a lot of ups and downs, and you get used to them if you're in this industry. And there have been moments where I thought I should go do something else. And hospitality has always drawn me back. So this is what I love. And I've been doing it since I was 18 years old.
Well, what do they say? You find something you love to do and you'll never work a day in your life?
Yeah, it's really true. And one of the things I love about hospitality is that people tend to stay in this industry. Like, not everyone finds it right away, but when they find it, they tend to stay for a long time. And I didn't really appreciate that until I was in Atlanta and they hired people locally. So I got to work with some Home Depot and Coca-Cola folks, and they came to IHG, which is where I was working. And it was the first time I had really worked with people from outside of the industry. Being in Bethesda, Maryland, there's a lot of people who are in hospitality and you interact with them and they've been in different companies. But the happy thing that I discovered along the way is that hospitality people stay for a really long time. And so the relationships that you build that develop into friendships, you keep those for decades. And it's really a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I see you spent almost 10 years at Host Hotels.
And I did. Yeah. It was incredible, actually. It was one of the defining roles in my career. I had been a consultant before that, doing hospitality valuations, doing strategic analysis, and then doing diligence for people buying hotels. Specifically, I worked on a number of New York acquisitions for a Singaporean buyer. And I thought at the time, I don't want to work on this, put together a report. Back in the day, you printed it out on actual paper, bound it, and stuck it in a FedEx or DHL to Singapore. There was no email. I'm dating myself, but that's how old I am. And I thought to myself, I don't want to just send this off and one day read about what's happening and if the deal actually happened. I thought, if that's a real job to be buying and selling hotels, I want to be on the principal side and I want to buy and sell the hotels and make those decisions. So around 95, 96, my husband got a job with Marriott.
Oh, so you're a hospitality family just like mine. Beautiful.
Yes, yes. And so he got a job with Marriott and we moved up to Bethesda, Maryland. And I said, I'm not going to be a consultant anymore. I really want to get on the ownership side. And I was lucky enough to join Host. And I spent the next 10 years buying and selling hotels and learning how to do that. on behalf of an amazing institutional owner and learned how to do deals. And looking at deals, having been a consultant, looking at deals from the principal side is very different. You obviously are taking on much different risk when you make a decision that the hotel is worth that amount of money. And I learned so much and grew tremendously in the 10 years that I was at Host. So really, as I mentioned, a career defining job that I had.
That's interesting. And then it looks like you went from there to Belgium with the W Hotel. So how did that happen?
I did. So towards the end of my time at Host, we worked on a $3.5 billion portfolio acquisition of 35 hotels from Starwood, Starwood Hotels. And it included the original W Hotel in New York, as well as a couple other W's. And it gave me a chance to look at W from a financial standpoint in terms of an owner, how they make money, and how they perform. And lifestyle was really just beginning then. Now all the major brands have their own lifestyle brands. But back then, Barry Sternlicht had started W as part of Starwood, and it was a new thing to be part of a major brand company. And I got a call from a headhunter and said, would you be interested in moving to Belgium to Starwood's European headquarters and head up W development for Europe, Africa, and the Middle East out of Belgium?
Wow.
And
forget that.
I thought that would be... It's interesting. I was actually in Bali at an Aman, staying at this beautiful place. I remember sitting in the pool of my villa and having this phone call with the headhunter and this phone call, which was going to change my life. We were staying there thanks to a friend of ours from Cornell, Leif Gussing, who was the general manager at that hotel. And we got to stay at that beautiful location. And life-changing phone call in that moment. But it was great. Starwood ended up hiring both myself to work on W for Europe, Africa, the Middle East, and my husband to work on the other 9 brands for Central and Eastern Europe. So we both packed up and moved to Europe in about 6 weeks.
Wow. Wow. That's how much they wanted you. Just kidding.
It was a lot of fun. Yes. It was a lot of fun.
6 weeks. That's a pretty quick turnaround time. What was it like over there? Was the hospitality business different from it is here in the US at the time?
Yes and no. I think the development piece was very similar. I had to learn, for example, management contracts. I was used to seeing management contracts in the US for hotels, and you kind of know what the range and what market is. What I discovered when I went to Europe is that the EMI, as we call it, the EMI contracts were a little bit different than the US contracts, and the Asia contracts also were different again. So you had different parameters and different things. But I found that there were some things that we could bring over from the US that were great concepts that I had learned from negotiating across the table from the Marriott folks for 10 years, such as longevity of contract and how to structure them in ways that were really beneficial for the management company. And I was able to bring some of those concepts to the deals that we did in Europe. So
that's interesting. Did you find, so I'm always fascinated by how companies work their human resources and their kind of their training, leadership, development. Did you find it was different there than it is here? Did you kind of work and interact with people in a different way?
I think they had a different sensibility to work. One of the things I discovered, which was a no-no, which I didn't know when I first got to Europe, is something we did all the time in the US. If you were staying late and you were working on something, you would just leave it in, you know, the person's chair just so that they would see it first thing in the morning. Well, I found out that people didn't really like that in Europe, so I had to stop doing that. Here in the US, it was not a big deal. You know, they'd just pick it up and they'd get to it whenever they were ready. But I had to learn there were a few different cultural things over there. I had to learn that if I worked through every US holiday and I didn't take the Belgian holidays. I didn't actually have any holidays, so eventually I had to pick. I had to pick holidays, and I'm like, okay, this one I'm actually going to take off and take as a day off. But we were doing so much and running so hard over there. It was super exciting. My region was from Reykjavik down to Cape Town and all the way across to Russia. So I got to see just amazing places, worked with lots of different people, went to Amman, Jordan to negotiate a contract. You know, things that we take for granted here, like doing negotiations before Zoom, doing negotiations over conference calls, which is the way we would always do it. And there were times I negotiated a whole deal and never actually met my counterparty. In Europe, they really want to do it in person. So it's a lot of in-person meetings. It's a lot more flying. But it also gave you a chance to get to know people and negotiate in the room, which was really fun too.
I wonder if the pandemic changed that at all.
I suspect there are a lot more negotiations now that take place over Zoom in the US, right? Rather than just doing it by conference calls. So I suspect that's happening a lot more now. Zoom is much more appropriate when you're going to do meet someone over the phone than just doing a call like we would have in the past.
Yeah, I think that's true. So then you decided to start your own business. Tell me a little bit about what you were in Brussels. You're like, okay, was the role ending? What happened?
So it's funny, you know, my mentor from when I was at Host, Doug Green, he was the one that really taught me the ropes of how to do deals. And he had been saying to me for years, Lan, you know, if you stay in that corporate job, they're never going to pay you what you're worth. You should come work with me. He was on his own putting together deals. And he has a jet now. Actually, he's on his second jet. But so he's doing all right. You know, Doug always does all
right. Sounds pretty good.
He's just brilliant. Yeah, he's brilliant that way. Anytime you can work for someone who's willing to show you the ropes and can calculate IRRs in their head during a negotiation, you should say yes. But I thought, you know, I have my corporate job. It's going pretty well. I think I'll stay with this. And then the recession came. And what they wanted to do was to roll up the W development role into a more, you know, marketing all the Starwood brands. And honestly, that wasn't my passion. And so my husband and I both ended up leaving Starwood at the beginning of 2009. We decided to stay in Europe. We locked our apartment and we went around the world for about 9 weeks. Which was really fun. We came back, stayed in Brussels. And then we thought at the end of 2009, we should get a little more serious. And we moved back to the US and we had worked on a deal together, the W London Leicester Square. And we thought, you know what, we have complementary skills. What if we set up our own company and partner with Doug on doing transactions? So that's what we did in 2010. We set up Acacia Hospitality to invest in hotels along with Doug. So we joint venture with him and go and find hotel deals and then bring in private equity money as our partners to be able to fund them.
Yeah. I love that. So how'd you pick the name?
Naming the company was probably the hardest part.
I'm sure.
Because a lot of names are taken. And real estate companies, we discovered, we had to do this research when we were naming our company, tend to be trees, rocks.
Right. Rocks, stones, the colors.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So we wanted to find something that meant something to us. And we tried a few different names, but acacia is a kind of tree that grows in the Southern Hemisphere, specifically in South Africa, which was a place we went to twice in 2009, right before we formed Acacia. And we found it inspiring our start for something new, a fresh start, a new company. And that's how we came up with Acacia. There's actually two Acacia Hospitalities, as it turns out. We found out later there was another Acacia Hospitality that started. We were first, but they came later, and they have a website. So if you go on the web and you look up Acacia Hospitality, that's not us. We're below the radar.
Excellent. And then while you were kind of doing that, it looks like you also spent a little bit of time with IHG.
Yeah. So when we started Acacia, we didn't have a lot of income at that point because the idea was we would be compensated through a promote. So we needed to make some returns before we started making any real money. And we said, if one of us gets a job, we'll go back to work and the other person would continue with Acacia. And in 2013, I got a phone call from Joel Eisman, who was the chief development officer for the Americas at IHG in Atlanta. And I had known him from my time at Host when he led a team that was focused on asset management for Marriott, which is, you know, Marriott doesn't really own a lot of hotels, but their assets are their contracts, their management agreements, and their franchise agreements and the fee streams that are associated with that. And so I had met Joel by negotiating with folks on his team. And he reached out to me in 13. He was at IHG at that point and asked if I would come down and interview in Atlanta for a role down there. And it ended up being a role where I started IHG's asset management team very much in the same way, because I had seen what had been created at Marriott. I had worked with that team and was able to set that up. I understood what the vision was for that role.
That's great. That's great. And now you're back full time with Acacia.
I am. So in 2019, I wanted to come back home to Bethesda, Maryland. It was really the place that felt like home to me. I didn't grow up here. My husband did. But if you add up all the times we've lived here, it's the place I've lived the longest. We tend to move away and come back, move away and come back. And I wanted to come back home. So we bought a piece of land, built a house, and in 2019, they started framing it in. So we moved back to Bethesda and moved into our house in 2020.
And I've seen various angles of your house on the few Zooms we've been on, and it's absolutely gorgeous, which I guess hospitality people, that's kind of the cornerstone is good hospitality for your friends and family. So what's it like to work with your husband for all these years? We could edit it out if you say something you don't want to say.
No, that's fine. We actually work together really well. And we have different areas of expertise of things that we do well and that we prefer to do. So Mike started out at HBS doing pro formas, and then was at Marriott in their feasibility group and then their real estate group. But he runs the numbers for the hotel deals we look at. And it's really unusual to have people as senior as he is running the numbers. And he just has a sixth sense for it. We'll go back sometimes at some of the deals that we did or the Hyatt Minneapolis that we bought and we renovated and then we expanded. And we looked at the expansion pro forma and it was pretty much dead on to what the performance of the hotel was for the first few years, which is kind of incredible. So I think we both have our different areas that we're good at. And so it makes it really compatible in that way. He doesn't like when I give him a lot of feedback on the numbers, so that's okay.
Typical.
Yeah.
And you've been in the industry kind of through times where women were not in the industry. So being a leader and an entrepreneur and a woman, has that been hard for you?
It has, but I didn't really know anything else. I was so invested in this industry and I thought this is what I want to do. Maybe I would have thought twice about it if I knew how hard it was going to be. But when you're in the moment, you're just kind of putting your head down and slogging through it. I would say most of the last 30 years as the only woman on the team, other than the admin person, usually the only woman in the room. So it's been interesting, but I think the industry, as most business, has really evolved over the last 30 years. I'd say real estate is probably lagging other areas of hospitality.
In everything.
Well, we looked at some statistics because one of the things I'm working on is I'm on a podium committee with other women trying to get more women on stages at industry conferences. But if you look at the ratio of men to women in different C-suite roles, actually the chief development officer, chief investment officer numbers are actually worse than the CEO president numbers. to give you a sense of what that's like. So we definitely need to see more women CDOs and CIOs, and that's starting to happen, and that's great. But we need more. I think it will lead to maybe, you know, more broader thinking. There's lots of studies that talk about the advantages of having diverse teams and diverse leaders.
And I think it was through Women in Hospitality that we actually met, right?
Yes. One of the things when I moved back up from Atlanta that I really wanted to focus on was areas that helped women advance in hospitality leadership. So I serve on a few nonprofits that are focused on that. One of them is Castellet College, which was recently rebranded now that we're part of AHLA Foundation. It's been rebranded to Forward Thinking, and that's where we bring panels of executive women, 3 to 4 women, to speak at hospitality schools around the country. And that's been incredible because I had my real estate network, my hospitality network, but I didn't really have the hospitality educator network. And that working on that project helped me meet a lot of really incredible people that are working with the future of our industry. And so I get to spend a lot of time with young students. Something I didn't realize is that hospitality schools tend to be 2/3 to 80% women.
Interesting.
And so just by the fact that we're bringing women to speak at the hospitality schools, we're reaching a lot of women. And in that endeavor, the goal is to, one, show students the different kinds of careers that exist. A lot of people think of hospitality as operations working in the four walls of the hotel. But there's also the business of hospitality, which could be hotel ownership. It could be lots of different things. So we try and show young women different kinds of careers that exist out there. And then also for them to dream bigger. Sometimes when I ask them, what's your big, giant goal? And they might say front office manager, which is a great role and really important to our industry. But I think to myself, you know, dream bigger. Like what else could you do? Like dream bigger. How about corporate headquarters of a brand company? How about at the ownership level? So trying to get women to dream bigger. So that's one thing I work on. I'm also part of a podcast that we do called DEI Advisors, where we interview hospitality leaders about their career journey and share lessons learned along the way. And that's all about empowering personal success to help women, underrepresented groups. And we actually find like lots of people are now watching it to help get career advice. So those are a couple of things I do.
I love that. And I think it's so important, especially for women, to feel like they have a network after the initial part of their career. So I think we've done a really good job of getting women into roles at the entry level, but I find that keeping them in that mid-career and keeping them engaged. And I love what you said to just dream bigger, because it is so important, because if you're not dreaming bigger, you're going to reach your goal and stop.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, you know, I never really thought about my next role as being a role. When I started as a consultant, I didn't think about being a hotel owner. I didn't think that was a thing that would be in my universe. And then when I discovered it, I was like, oh, I want to do that. And then when I got the opportunity to go to Europe to do W development, I didn't know that could be a thing until I was asked. And I thought, then I want to do that. So I think introducing more options to people earlier on is a great way to expand people's horizons and inspire them, hopefully.
So are there any organizations or programs or anything that you'd recommend for young women in hospitality who might be in an operations role, kind of at the property level, wanting to move up?
I think there's a few things. I just recently spoke to a class of seniors at the University of Denver. They are super bright and they're going to do amazing in their careers. One of the things I told them, and it wasn't just for women, is this idea of being smart versus intelligent, which I wish I had known about it when I was in school. You know, you go to school, you're a good student, you study, you get good grades. But that doesn't translate to moving up in an organization. And I think a lot of people, especially really smart people who are academically successful, they take that and they go, well, that served me well up till now. I'm going to do the same thing when I go to work. And that works great right up until about middle management, like that director level, maybe an entry level VP. What you don't see, where you see people getting stuck, is right in that middle management role. And part of that has to do with being smart, that EQ part, where you're connecting with people, where you're building relationships, where you are cultivating champions and doing work that is more EQ focused than IQ focused. And I remember when I was in middle management, I would think, if I just work a little harder, I'll get promoted. And what I actually needed to do was go learn completely different skills. And so I tried to share that with the seniors at school, just to be cognizant that what got you here is not going to get you there.
Best book ever.
And yeah. and that to be aware that it's those other skills, those smart skills, that are really going to propel you to senior leadership. You can't get there just by being really good and really smart at that one thing you know how to do.
I love that. And I can't begin to tell you how many people I work with in the middle of their careers trying to explain to them that I know you got here by doing great work in a spreadsheet or what have you, but being able to step back and be a little more strategic is just, it's so important. And I think, you know, I see often like women are asking for permission. They're waiting for somebody to say to them, and I think at the end, you know, you can do it. But I think for all the women out there, this is it. Like, grab it. You can do it. So go
for it and ask for it. You know, I was with my former CEO at a company I used to work at, and I said, you know, that role that went to this person, I would have been interested in doing that. And he said, did you ask? And I said, no. I should have asked.
There you go.
You know, like, hold your hand up. But sometimes you don't envision until someone gets that role. You're like, oh, I could have done that. You know, I should have thought about that earlier. If there's an opening or a role you think you might want to do, hold your hand up. And if it's not a little scary, you're not stretching yourself.
I love that. And I think that's completely true. And I think every successful person would probably say the same thing. So how's the weather down in Maryland?
It's interesting. Today we have 70 degrees, but my half brother is coming for Thanksgiving, and I think he's bringing the cold weather. It's going to be not above mid 50s next week.
Oh, so. Nice. We have a nice fall.
He's coming in from Anchorage. So our nice fall day is going to become winter, I think, soon.
Excellent. Well, here on the Jackson Lucas Impact Podcast, we have a segment that we're about to do. So are you ready for the hot seat?
Bring it on.
Oh. The Hot Seat is sponsored by KK Reset. KK Reset is an HR management and outsourcing consulting firm that specializes in helping organizations to reset their culture, structure, and path. They do this through services which include comprehensive consultation to identify gaps and opportunities for corporate training programs, HR services, and career mapping services. They've collaborated with nonprofits, startups, and academic organizations to protect them from liabilities, reduce turnover, and preserve their brand. They have also collaborated with a number of my clients on the real estate front who are not large enough to have their own in-house HR program. So they outsource it to KK Reset. KK Reset comes in, maybe sits on site a couple days a week, and provides, you know, everything you need from an HR perspective for your firm. So it's a great resource for those shops who just maybe it doesn't make sense for them to have in-house HR function. So please check them out at kkreset.com, kkreset.com.
Excellent. I knew you'd say that. I love it. So first question, do you have a book and or podcast recommendation?
I have both, if that's okay. So I have to talk about the
DEI. You're such an overachiever.
I have to talk about the DEI advisors interviews that we do. We've got a YouTube channel, and we're also on all the major podcast platforms. And we're closing in on 150 interviews with major industry leaders. So that is a great source for, I learn new tips every time I listen to one of those podcasts.
I love that. You know what? Send that to me. And then when we publish this, we'll make sure it gets into the notes because I think that that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And then here's my other one. I actually brought the book. I don't know if it's going to be backwards when you look at it, but it's called Stories That Stick by Kendra Hall. And Kendra is a professional storyteller that I met recently. Well, actually, a number of years ago, she was speaking at a Jazzercise Instructors convention. So I do that on the side. I'm also a Jazzercise instructor for the last 15 years. Yep. But Kendra spoke, and she was just really inspiring in terms of storytelling. And this goes back to the smart versus intelligent piece. One of the things I'm a big believer in is becoming a great storyteller, because the best story wins. It's not the most accurate story. It's not the story that people need to hear. It's the best story. So learn how to tell a story. Learn what are the elements that are important and how do you craft it in a way that's going to resonate with people. So I'm almost at the end of this book, but it is really wonderful. First of all, she has great stories, but she explains in business, how do you tell stories that resonate with people?
Oh, stories that stick. Okay, I have to check that out. So I'm sure you've done a lot of hiring throughout the years. What do you look for in somebody when you're hiring them?
You know, I wouldn't have said that this is what I was looking for, but the fact that I ended up having a team that was homogeneously motivated by learning new things. So intellectual curiosity for me is a really big piece of it. I love people who want to learn new things and are self-starters. If they don't know how to do it, they'll go figure out how to do it, or they'll ask someone to do it. They're not scared by, no one showed me how to do this, so I can't do this. There are people who will go into it and look for solutions or craft solutions. Sometimes the person who does it first, then you're the expert, right? All of a sudden, if no one's done it before. So in our team, our asset management team at IHG, we were problem solving a lot. We'd have a hotel that was having an issue and the owners were coming to us because the deal that they had originally constructed didn't quite work out the way they had hoped. So we had to come up with different solutions. And some of them were things that we had seen before, but some of them were, okay, how do we look at all the elements and what are the tools and levers that we have and how do we craft the win-win? And so there's an element of creativity to it. It's not art, but it is a little bit creative to come up with solutions that can be a win-win and figure out how to implement that in a way that feels good for everybody. So that spirit of curiosity and willing to try things they haven't done before, really important to me when I hire people.
I love that. And I'm sure you've mentored and been wonderful to a lot of people. And I'm wondering if on the flip side, there are any mentors or folks that have inspired you throughout the years.
Yeah, I've had a number of folks who have given me a chance when I was looking to make a transition, for example, from consulting to being on the ownership side. Doug Henry at Host was the one who supported me joining the company. I worked as a part-time consultant for them for a little bit, and then he went to bat for me to join the company permanently. And then Doug Green, who I've mentioned already, he was really the first person who took me under his wing and said, you're just going to like follow me around. And that's what I wanted to be. I just wanted to be a fly on the wall to go in and see how he discusses contracts with the attorneys and then sit in the room as he negotiates those contracts. Those were all ways that I learned how to do things because he just let me come along and sit, or even just to sit in the room when he's having a very contentious phone call with someone and he just put it on the box. And I got to listen to how it goes. So much of that was just learning by osmosis, and he was really generous in doing that.
And listening to people have those contentious calls is so valuable because I feel that people internalize them. But when you see somebody who is able to handle them in a professional way, it does, that hanging around that hoop really does rub off on you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Negotiations tend to have a lot of contentious conversations.
So. I know. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was really incredible. You are an incredible human being. I loved spending time with you and look forward to keeping up the dialogue.
Absolutely. I'm honored that you asked me to be on. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to talk with you. And I'm so glad that we got connected.